Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tramp. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tramp. Today we get to learn the halachas that relate to the shrouds and the Tahara process, the purification process. This is Siman Kuf Tzadi Zayin 197 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We're learning about the process of death and the Jewish rites and ritual that surrounds burial. A lot of very important halachas that a lot of people are not so aware of. This is usually kept very private. We're going to look at six concepts today, and they are the shrouds, the purification process itself, other aspects of preparing the body after the Tahara, sudden or violent death, and finally, use of the deceased's belongings. Let's start at the top. So in terms of the shrouds, that's our first concept. So what material should be used for the shrouds? These are the clothes used to bury the dead person in them. They should be made of white linen. Why white linen? So it's a sign of respect and a symbol of belief on the resurrection of the dead. We know that Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef teaches in the Gemara that the righteous will arise in their garments, so we dress them in a way that they're going to arise. And anybody who's ever seen shrouds, it's a deeply respectful, deeply beautiful process to see a person who's in this. It's very pure and clean. Should the shrouds be elaborate or adorned with hems or knots? So the shrouds may not have hems or knots. They may not be so even not where they're sewn. They cannot have knots at the ends of the seams as well. What about being fancy? So they're not allowed to be fancy or elaborate. They need to be simple so they're not as not to embarrass the poor. And also there's a certain sense of equality. No matter how fancy, no matter how rich, no matter what kind of life you live, everybody ends up in shrouds, in the same simple white garments. Should a man be buried in his talus? So the answer is yes, a man should be buried with his talus, but there isn't a addendum, that is that the tzitzis should be invalidated because you should not put a kosher set of talus on a person who cannot, on the body of a person who cannot fulfill that mitzvah anymore. So therefore what they do is they place the tzitzis into the corner pockets. They slice the corner and put the tzitzis into it, invalidating the talus, but then it is placed on the body in the as it goes into the grave. May the talus be used for burial be different from the one they used in us? So people say, oh, it's such a beautiful talus, I want to keep it. I'll buy a new one and give it to them. The answer is no. If the deceased had a beautiful talus and they use that every day, that's the schus, that's the merit to be buried in such a talus, not be buried with an inferior one because keeping the other one for sentimental value. What intention should one have when dressing the deceased? So this is for those people who are performing the process of the Tahara leading to the clothing, and they need to think, just as his body is being clothed, so too Be'ezrat Hashem his soul, and the Neshama should be clothed in the spiritual garments of Gan Eden. Who does the Tahara? So there's usually a team of four or five people, men for men, women for women, who are called the Chevra Kadisha, the Holy Society, that do this process called a Tahara. How's it done? We're going to deal with a few details in a moment. It's done in absolute silence. The deceased name is on the wall, but they do it in silence out of respect for the dead. There's no chit-chat. So let's talk about the Tahara a little more in detail. What is the Tahara? So the body is cleansed physically and also spiritually and is prepared for burial. What is the proper method of cleaning the body? So the body and the head are washed with warm water. All parts of the body, including between the fingers, the toes, should be thoroughly cleaned. The head should be shampooed, the hair combed and trimmed, the fingernails and toenails are cut, and so that's a matter of debate depending on different customs. What else is done after the cleaning? So 9 kabim of water are poured over the body, or the body is lowered into a mikveh in some facilities, if that's possible. What is the proper way for 9 kabim of water to be poured over the deceased? So the deceased is stood upright. Oftentimes in the current settings, they have a special sort of way of electronically moving the board into a vertical position. And then the 9 kabim are poured over the head, so it runs down the rest of the body. What's the approximate volume of 9 kabim today? It's around 4.5 gallons of water. So how do you do that if you don't have a container big enough for that? So the way it's done is that 2 or 3 containers are combined, and each one must begin pouring while the other one is still finishing. So it's a continuous flow of water, but one should not use more than 3. So 4 vessels can even pour simultaneously are not, can and should not be combined. So this is the purification process. There are many, many, many nuances which are very, very complex, and an incredible amount of training needs to be done for people doing this. And there's all complications about clearing out orifices. What happens if there's bed sores? What happens if there's bleeding wounds? So there's all kinds of complications, amputations, you know, pacemakers. It's a very complicated business, and there are people who train for years and years and years to do this in the most respectful way for those who have passed away. It's a very special thing. And it's called a Chevra Kedisha, a holy society. Most times, if somebody is doing this, you don't know that they're doing this. They do it very quietly, and they don't advertise that they are doing this. Muta, third concept, other aspects of repairing the body. So what other practices are done at the Tahara? So egg whites are placed on the face, and there's also soil of Israel, which is placed by the face. Some people have the practice of putting pottery on the orifices, like the mouth and the eyes. What is the purpose of the egg white and the egg and wine mixture? How's it used? So an egg in its shell is beaten, and wine or water is used to, if there's no wine, is mixed together to symbolize the rotating wheel of fortune of life. It's used to wash the deceased's head only. And it's not the proper practice for multiple people to do that part. It should only be one person. Should the deceased's fingers be kept closed? No, they should have everything is open. Some people say for Kabbalistic reasons you put the finger a certain way. The Kitzur says that's nonsense and should be abolished. There was also a practice he talks about sticks that are placed in the hands of the Niftar as sort of like a walking stick where they come to the next world. The Kitzur dismisses as a foolish custom, and he says if it's insisted upon, it should be placed in the coffin next to the deceased, but not in their hands. There is a Chasam Sofer who says that there is value to such a custom. Nonetheless, that does not seem to be the common practice. And we move into the next concept, which is after the Tahara, may the deceased remain in where the purification was done? So the answer is no. Once the Tahara has been done, they need to be moved out and be placed in an area facing the door inside the house. Oftentimes this is done in a facility today because a lot of the funeral homes that are Jewish-friendly have a Tahara room. And so after the Niftar has been washed, has been put into shrouds, is completely covered in a very respectful way, the way that's tied is even has its own methodology, then the coffin is closed and the Niftar is brought to the area where it's a refrigeration unit with their feet facing the door. Can one turn over the board where the body was on? So the Kitzur says that is considered dangerous and should not be done. May a parent kiss their deceased child, God forbid, or should somebody talk to the deceased and say that they wish they would be taken with them? The Kitzur says it's very dangerous to say that kind of thing. So expressing such wishes is dangerous and should be avoided. Who may exit the house first when the deceased is being removed? So no one should walk in front of the deceased except the pallbearers if they need to carry him to get through the doorway. Let's move into the next concept, which is sudden or violent death. If a person, let's say, fell, God forbid, from a building and they fell to their death, they died immediately, and there's clothing in there's blood in their clothing, what should be done? So in that case, the person is buried in their clothes, and shoes without purification, so no tahara is done, and they're wrapped in a sheet which is called a soivev to cover their clothing. Why is this? So we assume that the clothing absorbed dam ha-nefesh, which is the lifeblood as the person died, and therefore needs to be buried with them as well. What about the blood that was on the ground? So then the ground that in that area is dug up and buried with them as well, so their lifeblood is buried with them. And this is oftentimes, there's organizations like Zaka in Israel does this kind of thing. Unfortunately, when there's terrorist attacks or terrible accidents that happen, that the areas that there might be lifeblood is also buried as well. What about garments that are not worn at the time of time or bloodstained cushions? So let's say the blood flowed afterwards as well into other garments. So these need not be buried, but they must be thoroughly washed. And the water used for the washing should be poured into the grave. If the deceased bled while he or she was alive, but lived afterwards, what's the procedure for that blood? So then the regular tahara is done, they're buried normal. Even if there's stains from blood before death, because this is not considered dam ha-nefesh, that's not the blood that led to the death. What if a person was drowned with lo aleinu? So in that case, their body's treated like other meisim, they are tahara and tachrichim are done like regular. What happens if, God forbid, a woman died in childbirth? So if she lost much blood during that process, then she does not get a tahara. But if she died after the blood had ceased, then she's treated like a natural death. In the Kitzur records that in many communities, they do have the custom to perform a tahara regardless, and local customs should be followed in that case. What is done with a Jew who was murdered by a non-Jew? And even if, let's say, they didn't bleed, they were just strangled to death, God forbid. So in that case, they're buried as they are found in their clothes without a tahara. And the reason is, as the Shach points out in the Yoradei and Shulchan Aruch, is to arouse chema, to arouse a divine wrath when this person comes in front of the Creator, that they were killed in such a way that there should be a vengeance from HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the terrible situation which ensued. And we move to our last concept, and that is use of the deceased belongings. May any benefit be derived from the body or the shrouds of the deceased? The answer is no. The deceased and their shrouds are asr bahana, forbidden for benefit. What about the ornaments or prosthetics? Other parts that are attached to them, like let's say a wig, artificial or an artificial tooth, let's say the wig was woven into their hair. These are forbidden for benefit and must be buried with the deceased as well. What about jewelry or clothing that is that considered part of the niftar? And the answer is no. Can be used. Some people have the minhag not to use the shoes of the deceased. They should be thrown out. According to many, this was a medical concern, not a Kabbalistic concern, so that if a person necessarily had a disease in which which was contagious, one has to be careful about using their shoes because one doesn't want to get that disease as well. And if that's not the case, then it should be less of a concern today. Does it make a difference if the person is Jewish or non-Jewish? The answer is no, they're both asr b'hana. However, it is interesting to note that the isr hana, the forbidden use of getting any benefit from the body of a non-Jew, is an Isser Darabonin, is a rabbinic decree as opposed to Isser Daraisa by a Jewish body. And that makes a difference that in the case that therefore there's, let's say, a Chole She'en Wasakon, a person who is incapacitated and may need to get a benefit from a non-Jewish body, it is allowed in that situation, that extenuating circumstance. And this came up recently with somebody asked me a question about, let's say, a person who needs to have a hip labral reconstruction that requires material from a cadaver. So if it's a non-Jewish cadaver, in this case you have a Chole She'en Bo Sakana, that would be allowed for a Jew, would not be allowed because it's an Isser Daraisa, and they would not have the exception of a Chole She'en Bo Sakana. A very interesting application of this halacha. With this, you conclude. Have a wonderful and meaningful day.